Welcome, everyone, to our next Capstone Integration Project presentation, which Dale Humphreys will present in a few moments. You're invited to come in and take a seat. It would be great if we could be as evenly spaced as possible. So if you end up being at a table with only you, if you find a table that has an empty seat, I would love it if you would move. Brad, that's my seat. Okay. Okay, so are there two seats over there with you, Evan? Okay, so then if we can get you three to move to this table that has three, and then, or one of you here and two of you here, and Lonnie, there will be another seat. Yeah. We're going to try to fill out the tables. The six top is very important. Thank you all. Well, I'm pleased to welcome you to this, our second presentation of the day and of the semester. And I invite back one of our alums, Brad Kolb, to come and introduce Dale Humphreys.
Good morning. My name is Brad Kolb. I serve as the associate pastor at Grace Mennonite Fellowship up in Lacey Spring. And I'm going to give you an introduction to Mr. Dale Humphreys here. Dale and I met as first-year students at EMU in 2005, so 12 years ago. Dale and I became good friends, despite having very little in common at first. Our friendship was tough at first, because Dale and I found that we were completely incapable of walking together at the same speed. I always tend to move at the speed of perpetually late, while Dale says, I'm from Waynesboro, and in Waynesboro, we mosey. So Dale taught me to mosey, so I really appreciate that. And we became really good friends, starting in freshman year in 2005. Dale and I each had a handheld GPS, and we would play a game together called Find the Spam. And we would hide a can of Spam somewhere on the campus of EMU, and then we would text the coordinates to the other person. And then after class, the other person would have to go and find that, and granted, we would put it in as ridiculous a place as possible, and then rehide it, and it would go back and forth. And I say that to say, it's your turn, Dale. Somewhere over near the campus center in the bushes is still a rusty can of Spam sitting there, because we were not able to find it. So I'm putting that on you. Dale graduated with his bachelor degree from EMU in 2009, is that right? Dale began his MDiv studies and took classes at Denver Seminary in Denver, Colorado. He returned here to his home state of Virginia to finish his MDiv here at Eastern Mennonite Seminary. Dale is a very caring person, if you know him. Dale cares deeply for his family and for his pets, and especially for his friends. Dale is good at noticing the little things in your life, and he remembers them. And that's how you know that Dale really cares about you. Dale is an artist. Dale does writings and poetry and drawings. And if you've ever seen them, you can see what an expression of his journey they are, and they always speak to me somehow when I see and experience them. But most importantly is that Dale's life is a testimony that God is still in the business of resurrection. The Dale that I met in 2005 is a very different Dale than we get today to enjoy as good friends. The Spirit of God has done a lot of work in Dale, and I'm just so thankful for that. And I'm really excited to see what the future holds for Dale as a minister. In a ministry, in a pastorate, whatever lies ahead, I'm excited to see what God's going to do with you in that. I'm also excited to see what's about to happen here with these tables. So, without further ado, let's welcome Mr. Dale.
Morning, everyone. So our distribution is a little different than what I had imagined. Could I get two of you to move here, one of you to move here, two of you to move there, and one of you to move there? Can we do the math? Does that work out? It's okay. It's all right. Go there. Two of you go there. That's fine. As long as there's like three of you right there. Three at three. It'll be great. Awesome. Okay, now that every table is full, we're going to play a game together. Because I don't know how to teach this in a way that doesn't involve game playing. So let's all pretend for a moment that we are each individual discernment committees working at a church, hoping to hire a pastor. Maybe that pastor's me. I don't know. That'd be great. But they're all pretty narrow in their perspective. So table one, if you want to go ahead and turn your sheets over, you're all supportive. You all are pretty much in favor of this pastor. Table two, you're all resistors. You're all pretty much against hiring this guy. Table three are all worriers. You've all got something on your mind that you just aren't quite sure this is going to work out. Table four are all the mourners. They're the people who are worried about what they're losing and about all the things that have changed in their history in bringing this new person in. Table five are instigators, and they are all interested in talking about all the other problems going on in the church and not about the pastoral candidate. Table six are the mediators. They are interested in making sure everyone gets along within the committee. Maybe we'll hire the guy. We're not going to worry about it. We're just going to make sure we all are happy at the end of it all. So when they consider their pastoral candidate, supporters tend to all be positive. Resistors are all negative. Worriers have a hard time making a decision, as do mourners. Instigators and mediators are more caught up in their own group dynamics. In fact, why don't you sit down and try to talk to each other as if you were these roles? I've typed up some possible lines, things you might say, where you take that role on yourself. Try to have a conversation and decide if you want to hire this person. Go ahead. You can speak. So I'm going to start to bring you all back in for a moment. What you should notice in the midst of this is that you've become something of an echo chamber. You all more or less think the same thing, the same ways. You're shaped by your group dynamic, which is we all came from the same context. We all think the same and do more or less the same. How do we begin to communicate in a way that doesn't further that echo effect, in a way that doesn't devolve into personal conflicts or agendas or stagnate out of a desire to preserve the peace? In a way that is accessible to a broad spectrum of people to join in that conversation. We try on roles. We take on these roles to attempt to imagine what someone outside of our paradigm thinks, to begin to think in a new way. The center of the table are different roles from the other tables. Those are in a folder. I would like all but one of you to take a role, anyone you like, and use that role. That is your new person. Put aside the role that you were given and take one from the folder at the center. One of you, however, must maintain the group, the one that you were. Maintain what you were. Stay as a control group. So if you're table four, stay four. One of you. Sorry? Anything you want. Anything you want. And I would invite you, once you do that, to begin to have the conversation again with your new roles in mind and see the way in which that changes the dynamic of the group. With the same goal in mind, to choose this pastoral candidate or not. I'm going to go ahead and bring us back in again from our roles, finish out your conversation. You should have been able to try out these roles in a way that allowed you to note the increasing diversity and thus perspectives that these roles brought into it. Within the scenario, we might imagine a member of the search committee playing devil's advocate, someone taking on a role in order to broaden our idea of what the entire congregation might think. By doing this, we enable empathy. Taking these roles, we don't necessarily have to change our personal perspectives. If you have a core conviction that you grip to, that is core to who you are as a person, you don't give that up in order to take on that new role. The other in our, we are invited to try on a different perspective to better understand the other in our midst, as in other people at the table who maybe don't bring something forward because they are afraid to be different, afraid to be the one to speak out. We also begin to know something about ourselves. We notice things that we are afraid to voice, but we're given an opportunity by our role. Perhaps you are at nature an instigator, but you don't bring it out because you aren't permitted to say the things you want to say. In this moment, you're allowed to take on that role, and you can be as shifty and as mean and hateful as you want and spiteful because it's okay. It's your role. And at the end of the day, we still know that you love us and we love you, and it's okay. We call this role-playing. Role-playing is just a grown-up term for pretending and imagining. It's something we leave behind as we age. We leave it behind from childhood, and we give up on it. It's a misunderstood talent. It's not relegated to gamer culture. When I share with people that I love role-playing, they tend to assume that I play video games or that I hang out in gaming shops and that's all I do. But the reality is that it's not only something that gamers do. It's also something that we bring into peace-building. It's something that we bring into conflict mediation, to counseling, and to transformation. It's not reserved to children or the childish. It's something any of us can practice because it's so simple, and yet at the same time, it's something that can have a tremendous impact. It's not the same thing as acting, but it can be. I didn't want to belittle those in the theater by pretending that role-playing is the same as learning to be a character or to truly act on stage, but it can be. When tied to a set of rules, role-playing transitions from an individual way of behaving and seeing the world through a paradigm to game playing. Games are a universal medium. Children play games. Adults play games. People enjoy playing games. Some people are a little too good at playing games. Games are structured and ordered around rules, which create a paradigm of understanding for all those playing in the game. At your tables, you were all given a single role at first. That was the paradigm through which you played the game. The rules were everyone act in accordance with your table. But then we change the rules by giving out new roles, and in doing so, we broaden the scope of the game to incorporate other ways of thinking and feeling about a thing. Role-playing and game-playing are intimately tied, since without the two concepts, the roles being played come from would be disparate and disconnected. So where is the intersection? So what do role-playing games bring to the table when we talk about ministry? I believe they're helpful with cooperative efforts. They build group cohesion. They help us to be goal-oriented. There is a point to this game and a way to win. They inspire creative thinking and problem-solving. And as I've said earlier, they increase empathy for other ways of thinking. Role-playing and game-playing allow us to address issues indirectly through the context of an agreed-upon scenario and rules for engagement that enable us to come to the table together. So all of you knew you would play your role, but you also knew part of that was not to strike each other over your differences and disagreements. We call this a narrative storytelling game, or, in other words, how I got the seminary to let me use my Dungeons and Dragons experiences to practice small group ministry in new ways. Yes! Why I love stories, and so should you. What I mean by this is stories inspire. They make us who we are. We bring our stories with us wherever we go. And we create new stories and new relationships, and through that, we create a new narrative for the entire area and community in which we live. A story that does not impact us on some level is ineffective. It should invite us to be participants in some way, rather than passive observers. To qualify as ministry, I wanted my capstone research to contain particular components, which would enable it to be more than a group of friends sitting down to a table with pizza and dice. So what did I actually ask people to do? I create versions of themselves to take on roles for a given scenario. For some, this was a natural process. They were gamers at heart, or they hadn't let go of that childish imagination, and they were able to bring it back when we began the process of research. Others were stretched by that. That was not something they were comfortable with, and I wanted this to be something those who were naturally inclined toward it and those who were somewhat opposed to it could both take on and try out. Consensus toward this creating a deeper understanding of personal tendencies and capabilities seemed to be there in every group that I tried this with. At the end of the day, they would come away saying, well, I realized something about myself and about my capabilities and about things that I didn't realize I'm inclined toward when I sit down to play this game, I have to play a different version of myself. And in doing that, I realize the types or the parts of myself that I either push away and hide and bury, or the parts of myself that I bring forward. Some struggled with characters that became too divergent from themselves. What did it mean to be someone who is the polar opposite of who I am? So what else? I asked them to respond and interact within a given scenario. So much like you and your search committees, I gave them a scenario to work within. The story was shaped by choices, as well as the rule set we used. Some played to get a win through the rules, while others played to make things interesting in the story or fun for everyone involved. To honestly discuss through feedback the way in which the difficult or darker parts of the given scenario made them feel, both in their role as well as their personal feelings outside of the role. Some things elicited a response beyond the role they were taking on. For those who are not natural instigators who don't do well with conflict, that can bring something out in you. For those who aren't naturally mediators, it can bring something out in you to engage in a way that builds peace rather than further destruction. So how does that work within ministry? Indirectly dealing with an issue through a game enables us to have a more open conversation around the topic of the scenario. I realize that may sound a little backwards, but the reality is, when we're dealing with a medium, such as a game or another topic or a story, we're able to engage indirectly with a larger scenario or a larger situation. It also impacts our small group dynamics and life groups. I had a broad age range, 25 to 75, in my groups. A spectrum of spiritual experiences, from lifetime church members within a single denomination to the de-churched or unchurched individuals in our midst. It was also a diversity of relationships and small group experiences. Folks who prefer to never open up and haven't met before, to people who thrive in interacting with new folks in small groups and knew most of the people at the table. Narrative games open the door to conversation, but in a way that refocuses on a conversation of the story we told and the lessons we take away from it, while still allowing us to relate those experiences to real-life issues. I realize how wordy that was. Basically, we have an issue, such as hiring this pastor, but we don't necessarily have the capability to be anything more than an echo chamber. How do we begin to consider what others might think in the hiring process? We take on those roles, and it's safe to take on those roles because they aren't us at the end of the day. There is some interpretation required. How do we train leaders to draw biblical parallels to narrative scenarios? That was the biggest stumbling block for me, was how do I begin to transform a game that is secular into a game that teaches something scriptural or something that would help within the church? So where is narrative storytelling found in the scriptures? I wanted to have a biblical foundation for what I was doing. I believe Jesus' use of parables is the first use of narrative storytelling and game playing throughout the scripture. Jesus is teaching through narrative, but he's also invitational to the audience to find and interpret their own narrative within the story. Luke 10:25-37, the teacher of the law not only must identify for himself which role is that of the good neighbor, but is instructed to live in accordance with that role if he would understand who his neighbors are. He's not only hearing a story, but finding himself within it. Prophetic witness throughout the scriptures when Nathan confronts David in 2 Samuel. A man with a bunch of sheep takes the sheep from a guy who has one. What do you do? David rolls initiative and discovers the battle is within himself. For those who don't know, that's gamer parlance, and I definitely threw it in because it means who acts first. David decides he wants to act first. He wants to destroy the person who's done this. By giving David a narrative to step into, Nathan is able to allow the king to encounter his own guilt in a non-confrontational way. David, in considering the roles in the narrative, is brought into a place of understanding of his own behavior in the narrative and what he has done. The evolution of storytelling in our current age has come to invite audience involvement. Most games that are out there are more than just games. They invite you to participate. Most video games nowadays are in some way an interactive story. People are no longer satisfied with a few pixels moving on the screens. This is a sanctification of people, not mediums. Narrative storytelling is a means by which we can have meaningful conversation, but is not an inherently sanctified way to engage a topic. It is a tool that exists in a leader's toolbox, and one we should not be afraid to pick up or put aside as the need arises. The stories we choose to tell together will determine the capacity for our use of story to cause harm or healing, to draw people closer to scriptural truth or cast a veil in front of the message. So who can play? There are some weaknesses to this approach. I found that exploitation by people who want to use the rules to harass, discriminate, or troll the group in some way was possible. You have to be aware of the people you're playing with. You have to know that you can trust them, that they trust you, and they trust each other. It relies on input. If all of you had sat at those tables and refused to speak, I'd have had a real awkward time. People with more literal minds will struggle with the allegorical and imaginative nature of the medium. I ran into this in trying to recruit some people for D&D. They couldn't separate themselves from the character, and that became a hurdle for us to take on a role that was not themselves. Those who are unwilling to put aside their self to contemplate the convictions, mindset, and way of being of anyone other than themselves struggle with this. For those weaknesses, there are individuals who may communicate better over the medium of narrative storytelling games. Introverts are in some ways safer to speak because they are speaking out of a role rather than their personal conviction. External processes are given a large audience to formulate their ideas and beliefs. Uncertain individuals who are continuing to seek their position are invited to try on a number of different roles. So if you literally didn't know what you thought about the pastoral candidate, you could have sat at each table, tried on each role one at a time, until you found one that resonated with you, or perhaps more than one, and you could have that conflict out loud with your group. Youth and young adults, who may otherwise find roundtable discussions tedious or overly intense, can engage through a medium that allows participation with clear-cut rules. You have to consider your rule set. For my capstone research, we utilized a very light rule system. We put the game down to its bare bones, its skeleton, and we made it more about the stories we were telling. But we still allowed a game to be there to give us a medium to make it safe to communicate about very intense and sometimes very dark topics. There also has to be trust, as I mentioned, between these three groups, between the people playing the roles. So if the others at your group don't seem trustworthy, if you're afraid of them, you can't do this. Between the players and the one facilitating, if the people coming hadn't trusted me on some level, they would have struggled to take on those roles that I gave them. And between the prior groups and the chosen rule set. So to know that these rules aren't going to allow someone to cause you harm or to lead to some other form of harassment or damage to yourself beyond that role. So Search Committee 2.0, and I'll wrap up with this slide. Having played the role of the majority at your table and having played the role of the other in considering the pastoral candidate, the search committee can now approach the discernment process with a broader view, with different mindsets. Whether or not they hire the pastor is still up in the air, although if it's me, I really hope the answer is yes. But their ability to function as a leadership group has been enhanced by taking on these new roles and broadening their story to include input from diverse voices and perspectives. There is strength in diversity, but diversity with understanding that comes from having taken the time to experience the role of the others in our midst. Those are my sources.